Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the Star Coalition. So glad to have you with us here today, where we love to sit down and chat with some of the greatest minds in advocacy, research, and treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders, such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. And today, we are very excited to have with us Michael Pollack. He is currently the Chief Executive Officer for the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, otherwise known as DBSA. Michael has more than 20 years' experience in leading nonprofit organizations and previously worked in executive-level roles for the National Safety Council, United Way, and Thresholds, which is a well-known Chicago organization that provides health care, housing, and support for people with mental health conditions and substance use disorders. So members of Michael's family, he's been very open, have been impacted by depression, bipolar, and other related diagnoses. So he understands on a personal level the positive impact that DBSA has on the lives of people living with mood disorders, and which I think is important that we have a personal connection. So I appreciate you being open about that. Michael holds a BS in Business Administration and an MS in Organizational Development from Bowling Green State University in Bowling Green, Ohio. So thank you for being with us today. I'm very excited about sitting down and talking with you.
Hi, Luke. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
I'll tell you, I've had the great pleasure of being able to work with you and especially some of your staff on the national level and many of your affiliates that you have out there on the ground level doing some incredible work. I know that DBSA has really kind of a unique mission, and it's very different than a lot of other advocacy organizations. Can you just kind of share with some of our listeners a little bit about DBSA and really what sets you guys apart as an advocacy organization?
Yeah, well, for 35 years now, DBSA's mission has been to provide hope, help, support, and education to people living with mood disorders, specifically major depression and bipolar disorder. I think what differentiates DBSA from others in the mental health field, although we also share a common goal, and that is the people living with mental health conditions thriving and living in wellness. What differentiates us is that DBSA was started by individuals with mood disorders to provide support to others living with mood disorders, what we call peer support, peer-to-peer support. And it's the voice and the experience of those living with these conditions that makes us unique. It's in the center of our decision-making. It's the center of our policies, of our philosophy, of our core beliefs, and the programs and initiatives and our advocacy initiatives all stem from that one core principle.
You know, having that peer voice and peer-led discussions, I mean, there's no other thing that we should be doing, right, than listening to those who are affected by the symptoms. And I love that you talked about that thriving and wellness, because it's different for everyone, right? It's very unique. I know you guys, June marks the 35th anniversary for DBSA. So are you guys going to celebrate? What are you going to do?
Yeah. So 35 years ago, there were two women, Marilyn Weiss, who has since passed away, and Rose Kurland, from Chicago, where DBSA is headquartered, who went to Rose Kurland's doctor, Dr. Jan Fawcett, and said, "We want to talk to other patients who live with mood disorders. We want to share experiences. We want to get support from each other." And Dr. Fawcett helped to facilitate a meeting where Rose and Marilyn and others came together in their community and started offering peer support. So as part of our 35th anniversary, we're holding it in conjunction with the International Society of Bipolar Disorders annual conference, which happens to be in Chicago this year. We are going to be holding a number of events around their conference and actually at their conference to celebrate our 35th anniversary, including a couple of opportunities for Rose Kurland, who is now in her mid-70s, but still very active and a real delight to be around, where she will be speaking at some of our events, talking about the beginnings of DBSA, but more importantly, her reflections on what has changed and improved as it relates to ensuring that clinicians and family members and people who care about people with mood disorders, that they're listening to the individual living with a mood disorder. And it was really Rose's leadership and Rose's voice, both from a support service perspective and from an advocacy perspective, that led to this national organization with 200 chapters around the country that we now call DBSA.
Can you imagine that just starting out, that did she have a vision that it was going to grow like it has? And I'm sure she's seen a tremendous amount of change over the years. I know we've got a lot to talk about today. I maybe just kind of continue on with that thought. But, you know, what are some challenges that even today that you see may exist for advocacy or even those who are living with depression, bipolar?
Yeah, in preparing for our 35th anniversary, I've spent a lot of time, along with members of my team, looking at some of the archives. And while I think mental health has made some significant improvements over the last several decades, in some respects, in looking at some of the historical documents, it feels like we haven't moved at all. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. Mm-hmm. One is what we call self-stigma, the number of individuals living with a mental health condition who are still not comfortable disclosing and coming out and sharing their stories. And there's no judgment there. It's really a reflection of the lack of movement that we've made in our culture and in our society. I've met a number of individuals, very successful professionals in some cases, who live with depression or live with bipolar disorder, and they will not share with their employer, as an example, mm-hmm. because they don't want to see it impact their career path and their employment. And that, of course, then leads to concerns over their financial stability and you know, protecting their family and that sort of thing. So self-stigma is still a really important barrier. That's why I think DBSA's role about having the peer in the center of our decision making and identifying ways for those experiences to be shared in an advocacy front, in a kind of public relations front, as well as a peer-to-peer support environment, why it's so important to encourage others to share their story and chip away at that self-stigma. So that continues to be a barrier. I also think, and these are very much related, that our society still doesn't recognize mental health conditions the way they would any other health condition, mm-hmm. whether that's diabetes or cancer. I have this one experience where I was in a taxi cab not too long ago where the driver asked me where I worked, and I told him, and his response was to question why individuals behave a certain way when they have a mental health condition. It was treated as a kind of a personal defect or a flaw, as opposed to recognizing that this is a health condition, a chronic health condition, just like other conditions. We wouldn't talk that way about somebody who's living with diabetes or living with cancer or some other condition.
That's right.
So as a society, we still have some barriers to overcome. All related to stigma.
I guess I've heard several people mention it's not a casserole disease. It's not a casserole indication. You know, usually if you have someone who's diagnosed with cancer or heart disease or whatever, people bring a casserole to your home to help comfort you. But, you know, when you come out and you self-disclose that you're living with bipolar or schizophrenia or major depression or really any other brain disorder, people don't surround you with the support like they do with other indications. And the complexity of the brain, why is it that we treat brain disorders differently than we would a heart disorder or a liver disorder? It's You know, as far as we've come, and I'm sure that Rose has seen a lot of change over 35 years, we still have a long way to go.
We do. And I think tying this to public policy, if you look at the amount of money that our government invests in, say, cancer research, and this isn't by any means to get into a competition over which health condition is more important than another. But there's a disproportionate amount of money going into other health conditions, cancer as an example, than what's being invested in mental health. And that's a public policy issue. And the more we can talk about the importance of this issue, the number of individuals who are either living with a mental health condition or know someone living with depression or bipolar, and make this a more, what I call, more talkable issue, the more progress we'll make on the public policy front, including more investment in brain research.
You know, the statistics show, I guess, that it's usually an average of 10 years between first symptoms that may appear until someone reaches out for help. In any other indication, I mean, it's just baffling to think that that's a delay that we would put on ourselves or others if they had any other type of illness. So it is, we do have a long way to go. You know, I'm always interested in, and we talked briefly about some of the experiences that your family has gone through, but advocacy is such a unique component in our society. You need people that are strong. You need people that are willing to step up and be a voice sometimes for the voiceless. What kind of brought you into the journey of where you are today working as one of the top advocates in the nation?
I consider this role leading DBSA as being the intersection of the, what I call the personal and the professional coming together. Mm-hmm. Literally since the time I was born, I've grown up in a family impacted by mental illness, mental health conditions. And so this has just always been a part of my family's life. In addition to other family members living with mental health condition, I have a sister who is now in her mid-40s and lives with bipolar disorder. And I'm fortunate to say she is living a very healthy life, takes very good care of herself, mm-hmm. has a really good support around her, very good health insurance, which allows her access to care that not everyone in our society has. So I've seen on the personal side the long-term impacts, both the good moments and the difficult moments as a family. On the professional side, as you mentioned in your introduction, I've spent my entire career working in the nonprofit sector, and that was certainly by design and by choice. Mm-hmm. I look forward to getting up every morning and working for and on behalf of DBSA's mission to advance it. So to come into this role with my professional background and my personal experiences, it really makes this job very personal to me, and the work that we're doing really important, because there's a lot of individuals and families out there that depend on services and the role that DBSA plays.
I think you hit the nail on the head that there are people that depend on the services provided by DBSA and others. What a great opportunity for individuals in their communities to not only have that support network, but I'm sure that there are a lot of communities that could use the guidance of DBSA National to maybe start some local chapters and really begin that conversation on the local level. I mean, I know we talk about things on the national level a lot about depression, bipolar, and other brain disorders, but when we look down, the change really happens in the community. The conversations that open up and the reduction of stigma happens in the neighborhoods and the schools and the workplaces where people live. And what a great thing for DBSA to be that voice for those individuals and then give a platform for those individuals to be able to be with others and to communicate their needs and wants and desires. So I know that you guys have you've had some changes in the last couple of years. You guys are doing some really innovative things. What's happening at DBSA now, and what are some of the kind of looking into the future? What are some things you guys want to accomplish?
Yeah, our board just approved a 3-year strategic plan for DBSA that gets to the heart of your question. And just briefly, we talk a lot about the fact that we have chapters around the country and they offer peer support groups. We have approximately 500 support groups meeting on a regular basis all over the country. But there are areas of the country that where communities don't have access to a support group, or there are support groups, but they don't have enough facilitators to meet the demand in those communities. And so we've got a number of initiatives in place. One is recruiting and training more facilitators so that there's some succession planning and the ability to expand the number of support groups where some of our chapters currently exist. We're also identifying communities, not just geographic communities, but demographic communities where we want to offer more support. We know, for example, that the suicide rate among veterans is significant, and particularly with veterans who do not have access to a local VA hospital or who choose not to use their local VA hospital. We know communities of color where there's added, in many cases, added dimensions of stigma around talking about and receiving support and access to care with a mental health condition. So we're looking to expand the number of support groups in those ways. We also offer online support groups already. We have 6 support groups currently. We're going to be adding 5 more that meet on a weekly basis, and we want to target some of those new support groups and market them to particular communities. Individuals who live in rural areas where the distance to get to any kind of support, whether it's a hospital, a mental health provider, or a DBSA support group, is really challenging. So targeting support groups specifically for rural communities is one of the things we're looking at in our future. We also know that there's a major shortage of psychiatrists and other clinicians focused on behavioral health in our country, and that problem is not going to get solved quickly. So we spend a lot of time training individuals who live with a mental health condition to become peer support specialists. They get trained by DBSA, and then they get hired, and they earn a certain number of hours working in a behavioral health setting, as an example. And then, depending on the state they live in, they can pass a certification exam and receive certification. Those peer specialists, individuals who live with a mental health condition or substance abuse disorder, providing peer-to-peer support to somebody living with depression or bipolar who can relate and understand what they're going through, those individuals become part of the clinical care team. They don't substitute for the psychiatrist, but they provide added support, as an example, in between appointments. In the VA system, as an example, one of the benefits of peer support specialists has been to ensure that patients return for their next appointment. And we're finding that when those patients or those peers have access to a peer specialist, the likelihood of them continuing to access care increases significantly. Mm. So we want to continue to expand promoting the role of the peer specialist, promoting the training that we offer, and promoting and demonstrating through research and evaluation some of the efficacy that that comes about when a peer specialist is part of the care team. So those are a couple of the initiatives that we're involved with and looking to expand upon going forward.
Amazing. I guess the common theme in a lot of that is access, making sure people have access to services, access to support, and then leadership, becoming leaders within their communities and within their support networks to be champions for themselves and others who are living with depression and bipolar. So I know one important thing that we talk about nationally, and it's part of the conversation, is really early intervention. What can we do as advocates, or maybe what is DBSA doing to really address young people and their ability to open up and have access to care?
Well, there's two things. The first is DBSA, for a number of years now, has created an online community for parents and caregivers of children, youth, teens, young adults living with mood disorders. It's called the Balanced Mind Parent Network, and it's an online community where parents can get support and resources from one another. For young adults in particular, we offer both through a number of our chapters and through our online support groups specifically for young adults. But we also know that that's not enough. And while there are other organizations also focused on youth mental health, there are still gaps in resources and services available. We did a survey in 2018 of individuals living with mood disorders, over 6,000 adults. And one of the questions that the adults were asked was when you think back, how old were you when you experienced your first symptoms? 69% of the survey respondents started having symptoms before the age of 17. And more than one in four, 27%, remember having symptoms before the age of 12 years old. So we need to make sure that parents, teachers, coaches, and other adults that are in the lives of children recognize the signs and symptoms of mental health conditions, and that they're able to know how to have those conversations with those families and direct them to the appropriate resources. So DBSA this year launched a new Supporting Youth Mental Health Initiative, and over the next several months and the next couple of years, we'll be creating more resources and more toolkits, not just for parents, but for the other adults that are in children's lives from as early as grade school on, and there'll be age-appropriate resources, not just for the adults in their lives, but also resources that the kids themselves can access to support them in ways around coping skills, resiliency skills, those sorts of things. So we look forward to rolling those out in the months ahead.
I know that you guys do some research work yourself, but it does show that early intervention is increases the likelihood of having better outcomes long-term for individuals. So that early intervention is a huge component in the long-term viability of someone being able to have a healthy, thriving life despite living with depression or bipolar. So I commend you guys on the work you're doing in that area.
Well, thank you. We're learning a lot from that survey I just referenced, in that there are a number of very specific topics that people with mood disorders are telling us they'd like to see more research around. And that's become our research agenda going forward. And in partnership with our scientific advisory board, our goal is to start conducting more research and involving peers in the research process, so that it's not something happening to them or about them. It's something that they're involved in from the beginning.
Wonderful. I just want to say you guys are doing incredible work, and I appreciate so much having a few minutes to spend with you. I hope that at some point you'll come back and we could talk. I know that you guys have an incredible national staff, and in just really saturating that education and support and wellness for those living with depression and bipolar, and we want as many people to get involved with you guys as possible.
I appreciate that, Luke, and I would just encourage your listeners to visit dbsalliance.org. If your listeners are individuals living with a mood disorder or family and friends, you will find significant resources, including where to find a support group or an online support group where someone can access. If you're a clinician, I would encourage you to take a look at the resources and share them with the individuals that you're serving and supporting so that we can be an additional resource to people living with mood disorders, depression, and bipolar.
Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us today. Continue your great leadership. Continue to be really a visionary for those in the advocacy world, and especially your incredible staff and your support networks across the U.S. As Michael mentioned, please go to their website at www.dbsalliance.org, dbsalliance.org. Right on the front page, find support, zip code, enter the miles, get involved and get support. So thank you again for joining us. Michael Pollack is the CEO of Depression Bipolar Support Alliance, known as DBSA. He is doing incredible work along with his wonderful staff and team across the nation. So please visit their website at DBSA Alliance or dbsaalliance.org. And check them out. Be a resource for yourself, your family, and your loved ones. Thank you guys for joining us for the Star Coalition podcast, again, where we love to get together with thought leaders like Michael Pollack and others to discuss topics which we know affect each and every one of us. Be sure to follow the Star on social media and join us on our website for a lot of great information at www.thestar.org, thestarr.org. Thank you for joining us today, and we will see you guys very soon.